The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now, there's so much happening in sport over the weekend, and we have the weather as well. So it's like the perfect scenario, isn't it? Owen Sheehan from Off the Ball is here. The championship and the sun, like, it's just perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, it goes hand in hand. Yeah. It really feels like the championship begins this weekend because the sun has finally decided to kind of sneak out, and everybody will be a little bit more excited to actually go to games this weekend, particularly in Gaelic games. And I suspect attendances might actually be up around the country. It's a perfect time of the year as well, particularly on the hurling front where everything really matters at this stage. We don't have the dreaded dead rubber for another few weeks in either of the two main provinces.
We'll all be like calves let out of the shed after the winter this weekend, won't we?
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. And like you just think of all the provincial grounds around the place, from say Nolan Park tomorrow evening at 6:30 is the first thing I have up here in front of me. Like Kilkenny on a sunny Saturday evening is a great place to be. And you look at the Munster games, like Parky Queeve, and the sunshine on Sunday afternoon is going to be beautiful as well, assuming the sunshine does last until Sunday afternoon.
It will, but we're not going to countenance it not lasting, certainly not as we sit here on Friday anyway. So which one of the championship games are you most looking forward to, or do you think we'll have the best storyline when we're chatting again on Monday?
I'd be most looking forward to Cork versus Limerick, but I think the most important storyline might actually be Waterford versus Tipperary, because the loser of that game I think will be in a spot of bother. I think Tipperary versus Clare later on in the round robin down in Munster is actually going to be a shootout for qualification from this group. I think Limerick and Cork possibly look like the two best teams in Munster, but neither of them are going to have a 100% record after this week, obviously, because they go up against one another. It feels like a defining rivalry in modern hurling, Cork versus Limerick. It feels like Limerick actually get the best out of Cork, and Cork have put in some of their best performances in recent years against Limerick. But at the same time, you know, neither of them have actually won the All-Ireland in the last 2 years. It is Clare who got over the line 2 years ago. It is Tipperary got over the line last year. So can it really be the defining rivalry unless they've actually faced off in an All-Ireland final, and unless they're actually back-to-back All-Ireland champions? That's probably what Tip people and Clare people might actually put forward. But I think after them not playing last weekend, I think Limerick's chances of this All-Ireland have not been dented in any way. I think a lot of people still have them down as their favourites. Now, can they go to Parky Queeve and get a win on Sunday? That's a different matter. I think they'll be slight favourites for it, but Cork would love nothing more than to put a dent in Limerick's qualification hopes, because that's what will happen if they lose on Sunday. That's how ruthless this whole thing is. If they lose, even if they maintain their status as All-Ireland favourites or warm favourites, they could still be in danger of not getting through this group. You can never write anything off.
So even if people want to argue with you about whether it is the rivalry of the championship, they're going to tear strips off each other on Sunday. It's going to be
a
battle royale.
Now, the thing is, Limerick did annihilate Cork last year when it came to this match in Munster. And we thought that was like Limerick's arrival into 2025. And we thought, right, this is it. Clare had their moment last year. Limerick are going to win the All-Ireland this year. Cork have been firmly put back in their box. Limerick were knocked out of the championship a few weeks later by Dublin, when Dublin were down to 14 men. And then you kind of thought the tables had turned considerably, and Cork were going to win the All-Ireland, and they got hockeyed in the All-Ireland final as well. So I'm picking holes in my own argument here about this being the defining rivalry. Let's just say it's going to be a great game on Sunday.
Well, we mentioned Mayo versus Roscommon as well. Actually, we were chatting about this by default because Chris O'Dowd was talking to the Irish Times about his history in the GAA, you know, playing for Roscommon 30 years ago, and the loss that he never got over, looking ahead to this game as well. People talk about Roscommon hating Mayo more than Mayo hate Roscommon. I don't know if that's fair or whether it matters here. There is an intense rivalry.
There is. I think that's such a demeaning way to describe Roscommon. I think anybody who hates somebody more than they hate them kind of suggests some sort of inferiority in that relationship. So I don't want to comment on that for the sake of Roscommon people. The big storyline from this game is that Colby McDonald is going to make his first championship start. So he's been named in the starting 15 for Mayo in the full forward line on Sunday afternoon. So that's very exciting for all the neutrals who want to keep an eye on that one.
Yeah, you've been watching him now for as long as we've been chatting here on the programme.
Yeah, he is magnificent. He really is. Like, to be fair, I've only actually seen him in the flesh once. It was down in Tralee when they had that bad defeat against Kerry. But even in the opening stages of that game, he looked exceptional. And he's going to occupy the best man marker in that Roscommon defence. Where he's going to play is a different story, because while he's named in the full forward line, I really like to see him out the field a little bit more. He's big, he's able to look after himself, and he can shoot the two-pointer, crucially. Mm-hmm. So that position may be a little bit harder to define. It's just going to be finding time for all these things, because that is on at the exact same time as Waterford versus Tipperary. So as is often the case on a GAA weekend, those prime Sunday afternoon fixtures do tend to get clogged up with a couple of fixtures. So there's a direct clash between those two games, which a lot of people, I think, would like to see.
Okay. And Jim McGinn is saying that he expects Down to throw the kitchen sink at Donegal this weekend as well.
Yeah, it's kind of last chance saloon for Down now to qualify for Sam Maguire, because Westmeath put the cat amongst the pigeons last week with their unexpected win against Meath. That knocks Down out of the Sam Maguire places unless they get to an Ulster final. But Down would need to win this game away to Donegal this weekend, and then they'd also need to beat Armagh most likely in an Ulster semi-final and make it to an Ulster final. They have it very hard up there in Ulster. It is unfair, but into the fact that it's based on geography, whether or not you qualify for Sam Maguire from an outside the top 16 spot, and Down, it would be very, very unlikely if they're going to be contending for Sam Maguire. So they'll have to, I suspect, settle for a place in the Talisman Cup once again.
Okay, so I'm going to jump now to the World Cup.
Yeah.
This is slightly complex, but the Italian sports minister says, never mind the Italian ambassador, rather the American ambassador to Italy, who suggested that Italy could replace Iran in the World Cup. And we're looking at that going, well, if they're suggesting Italy should be there, why can't we be there?
Yeah, I saw someone saying that the FAI now has the opportunity to do the most shameless thing in the history of sport and actually put their hands up and say, put us in, coach. Nothing's going to happen here in terms of the outcome. I don't blame anybody for making this a big story, because, well, first of all, you have Paolo Zampoli actually talking about this. You have a US special envoy saying that my beloved Italy should be in the World Cup, and we should have a lot of Italians who are obviously generations old here in New York City in particular, you know, celebrating football, and they've won the World Cup four times, etc., etc. And because it's the United States, you can never write anything off in terms of something manifesting itself in reality. I just don't see this materializing at all. Like, you've had Marco Rubio coming out saying the Iranian footballers will be welcome in the United States. Maybe some of their staff members and some of the people around the Iranian Federation may not be able to get visas because of their connection to terrorist organizations or organizations that are deemed to be terrorist organizations by the United States. And that could be the issue.
I don't know how much Marco Rubio has a say in things, to be honest, as things stand. I don't know. I don't know how much sway Marco has anymore with Don, yeah. Big Don.
Does he have more sway? Is he more powerful than Paolo Zampoli?
It
would be, look, again, you can't really find the appropriate language to totally write this off. I was going to say this would be a sporting scandal were there to be some sort of situation where Italy replaced Iran in this year's World Cup.
Just because someone said it.
Yeah, exactly. But then again, how many scandalous things have actually occurred under this administration over the past couple of years? So maybe you wouldn't be all that surprised if that were to actually happen. But it has always felt like a game of chicken here, where the United States really wants Iran to pull out and Iran really wants the United States to kick them out. Mm-hmm. And then they'll be able to play the poor mouth on this story, whichever side is seen as the victim in all of this. But I don't think either side is blinking. And I think there's an acceptance that Iran will take part in this competition, whether or not a load of Iranians are allowed into the United States with the footballers remains to be seen.
OK, let's go to the Premier League. So Man City, top of the league.
Yeah.
Arsenal playing Newcastle. Uh-huh. Newcastle haven't been great. So Arsenal still clinging on with their little fingertips.
Yeah, they'll be top of the table tomorrow night, basically, if they get anything off Newcastle United. So they'll be framing it as that.
For another 5 minutes, they'll be top of the table.
For another 5 minutes, because City are in FA Cup action this weekend against Southampton. Like, I did come in here on Monday and completely write off the Premier League. I said Manchester City are certs now to win this. I still believe that, but the Burnley performance midweek, it makes me regret saying that, just a touch. I thought they were going to go out and
it also takes a bit of time to recover.
Sometimes the heat of the moment extends into Monday morning as well as Sunday afternoon. I thought Manchester City would put a few goals on Burnley on Wednesday night. I thought they'd open up the goal difference gap at this point. I still think they absolutely will. I still think if you're backing a team to score, if it's a head-to-head on goals over the next five games, you'll always back Manchester City, particularly over this Arsenal team. And I still think they will win the Premier League title. But with a win tomorrow evening, it just changes things ever so slightly, because it'll be, you know, their most recent results is a victory. It won't be a defeat. And that good performance, which was a good performance last Sunday against Manchester City, will have been franked with a win against a team that they have often struggled with, which is Newcastle United. Now, as you say, Newcastle are under pressure as well. They're not really out of the running when it comes to Europe. So they're on 42 points there in 14th. It's been a desperate season, but they're only 6 points off Chelsea and Brentford, let's say 7 points off Bournemouth, who are in a European spot. So they still have something to play for. Like, it's amazing, really, that again, it's another weekend in late April, and every single fixture in the Premier League has something riding on it, really. So that'll be tomorrow at 5:30. Wolves versus Spurs, though, at 3 o'clock is probably one of the ones to watch. It's happening at the same time as West Ham versus Everton. Nottingham Forest are going to have already played tonight. They're away to Sunderland, and that relegation picture just gets more and more interesting. I do think West Ham not winning on Monday night just leaves a door ajar for Tottenham, because, again, speaking of goal difference, they've got a goal difference that is 6 goals better than West Ham, and they're only 2 points behind them. So you wouldn't be particularly surprised if goals decided one of the two main stories in the Premier League this season.
Okay, and Chelsea, of course, in an absolute jock, like a mess with an interim manager at this stage of the game.
Yeah, they're also in an FA Cup semi-final as well. They're playing Leeds on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. So it could be one of those weird situations where they sack Rossini, they might get a little bit of a bounce, a little bit of a reaction this weekend. They get to an FA Cup final, and who knows, they might have silverware at the end of a car crash of a season for them. But the Liam Rossini thing was so well advised. You kind of have a little bit of sympathy for Rossini, but obviously he's going to get a payout of over £20 million, so that sympathy only goes so far.
Is he? After what was that? How many days was he in charge?
I can't remember the exact number of days, but around 100 days. And he had a contract that was running until 2032. So that was a misstep.
It's 20 million.
Yeah,
of a payoff.
Yeah, that's how much that is going to be in that contract. But Chelsea, this is nothing new for them. They have parted company with managers who have looked like bad hires in the first place. This looked like a terrible hire from very early days. You can maybe, to some degree, if you're really looking at this in a glass half full way, applaud them for taking a chance on a young manager who was from within the same company in Blueco. He was working with Strasbourg. He was, an emotionally intelligent type, a LinkedIn type to some. And maybe that just still does not wash in a modern dressing room. But I think the jargon that he ended up uttering on many occasions, I think that sort of view of him actually permeated the dressing room, and maybe he lost the respect of his players as well.
Okay, all right, he'll be all right, though.
He will.
The Women's Six Nations. So we have Ireland going to France. They beat Italy last week. But like, the French and the English have really had a firm grip, haven't they, over the last six seasons on the game. So it's up to Ireland to break that, can they?
They can. They haven't beaten France since 2017 is the only thing. But they've been getting closer. It was only 12 points of a loss in the Six Nations last year, albeit at home. And then there was that game in the World Cup where France won by 5 points. It was a really awful day. If you go back to the weather, I don't know what the forecast is like down in Clermont this weekend, but I suspect it's going to be just as nice as it is here. The thing that really helped Ireland in that World Cup game last year was that it was an awful day. There was a gale force wind, something like you'd see in Salt Hill in a National League afternoon, and Ireland really benefited from that, particularly in the first half of that game. So I'm just a little bit concerned of getting carried away with that performance in the World Cup last year, because it was a freakish set of circumstances. That being said, there is no question that they are getting closer to this French team. They don't really like each other, these two teams. Like I mentioned it on Monday, the Berthomieu biting incident that went unpunished at the time in that game last year. She got a multi-game suspension. I think it was a 9-game suspension after that bite last year, but she obviously continued to play that full game against Ireland. So she's going to be starting tomorrow night. She starts as a blindside flanker against Ireland, and I wouldn't be surprised if she shipped an early hard tackle or two from one of her Irish counterparts just to put down a bit of a marker. So they absolutely can. This is the defining game of Ireland's Six Nations. Tomorrow, 8:10, if you're going to watch one of the Women's Six Nations games for Ireland this year, this is the one. Yeah, okay. For sure.
Owen, thanks so much. Enjoy the weekend of sport.
The Clare Byrne Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.